life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Smith, the man made of super dynamite alloy. This is episode 24 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. Once again, I'm joined by my co-host, powered by Get a Raise. It's Anthony Askew.
Hello, Brian. Hello, listeners. Nice to see you.
That gives you a clue as to what we're talking about today, which is early 1970s Go Nagai TV shows, or Dynamic Productions TV shows, because some of these are more Ken Ishikawa than Go Nagai. Basically, spinning off from the panel I did at Iacon, because I kind of sort of, a lot of these I just had to go through very quickly in the panel because I was running out of time. So what I've done, this is one of these episodes where I've made Anthony watch a load of cartoons that he might not have otherwise wanted to.
You can tell by the sighs and huffs and haws already. Well, I'm going to see. Yeah. But no, we'll see.
Yeah, so I've made him watch the first episode of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 shows. two of which are live action mixed with animation. But all the other ones are straight cartoons. And we start off in 1972 with the first Toei Dynamic Productions show, Devilman.
Debudoman. Which I was already not an enthusiast. I was quite big on the whole Devilman thing after seeing the Over Year. And I'd already seen this episode before. In the past, and for those who don't know what Devilman is, it's pretty much what it says on the tin, really. in the first episode, group of demons who are ordered to go and cause havoc in hell, but only one of them can go in a host, and the host kind of acts as like this. I don't know why they need a host, because they're pretty strong, they could probably just go in as they are, really, just cause havoc. But anyway, they need a host to go in somehow, and Devilman, because he's pretty hard, beats these other two. There's a big silly blob and a big bird look-alike kind of thing. Do you know the names of
remember the names. They get beaten pretty easily as well.
Yeah,
they're pretty lame.
Well, one looks like Big Bird, and the other's a big silly blob, so I wasn't
expecting. In fact, you think the guy who gets sent later in the episode, who Devilman fights, puts up much more of a fight than these two.
Oh yeah, he's pretty good.
Why wasn't he picked to be one of the three?
But Devilman kills him, and it's pretty brutal, actually. I don't know what kind of airtime this had, but it must have been quite late, surely.
These are all for kids.
Hell. That's quite surprising, actually.
Yeah, I'll get into a bit in Mazinga because I've got a good analogy as to what a kid's show might look like if it was made to the same standards.
Oh, but people getting like one of them falls on a spike and it's green blood, but green blood might as well be red blood. It doesn't matter to me, it's blood. Not that I'm squeamish at all, but for kids, I thought it was pretty.
It's heavily sanitized from the comic, though, compared to, and which was for kids as well.
Oh, right.
Because obviously you've seen the OVA.
Yes, which I love.
They've stripped out the character of Ryo.
Oh, was he not in the series at all?
No, because I think they kind of combined, I think if I remember correctly, they're combined in the TV series, they combined his origin with Akira's, because I think it's his dad who's out in the Himalayas.
Gets
killed.
I see.
As opposed to here, it's Akira's out in the Himalayas with his dad.
Mm. And everyone's got great, whether it be a big brush moustache or a pencil moustache, or in the first episode, moustaches and it's your ideal world, I think, Brian. You're a big fan of moustaches and all. But I don't know whether I could watch the rest of the series.
No,
which is a shame, because being such a massive fan of the OVA, I think it's fantastic. Which has been a while since I've watched it, I've got to admit. But the teacher.
Oh, yes.
There's a teacher who gets bullied. Poor Akiba.
I couldn't quite tell whether he was supposed to be. It's Tobuchiri Sensei. I looked his name up for Enma Cub.
Oh, so it could potentially be the same teacher.
He looks kind of similar.
He's got the big jaw.
And the tiny moustache.
But I just feel sorry for him.
Well, yeah, because that character, I don't remember him being in the manga, but he crops up and there's obviously Tobuchiri Sensei is definitely in Enmakun, and he crops up in Abashiri Family in the manga.
Right.
And then as we talk, like later on, there's a character in Cutie Honey who's basically that character, but with breasts.
I know who you mean.
Complete, still with the moustache.
Yeah.
Even though it is a woman.
But they're so cruel to the teacher, and Akira becomes such a bastard.
Well,
I know that's the point, but... one minute he's such a bugger to everyone, and then he's just... The transition's pretty quick, put it that way. I know it's all to do with love with the girl, possibly, I don't know.
Yeah, in the comic, it's more, he's clearly an absolute wimp to begin with.
Yeah, that's more obvious in the OVA as well.
Yeah, and then Ryu binds Amon to him, mm-hmm. and turning him into a badass, and then eventually Devilman. Whereas in the series, it seems more like Devilman is possessing Akira's body. And is it Mickey?
The girl. The girl
of the family he lives with.
I think that's her name, yeah.
Yeah, she slaps him and
Incredible Hulk and...
Sort of tells Devilman off. And then Devilman starts to fall in love with her and refuses to destroy the world. Or at least refuses to destroy her. It's not quite clear as to whether... He might still be up for destroying the world, but living her life.
And how long did this run for in Japan? Like,
this went for 39 episodes, so 72 to 73.
Quite a
I mean, the first episode, what did I like about it? I like the haunted house feel of the second half when the demon sort of starts possessing objects and water and various things. And some decent enough animation, sort of particularly the bike stuff when Akira's riding around on his motorcycle harassing that teacher.
The transformation's pretty good when he finally transforms properly into Devil Man. That looks pretty cool.
And the music's pretty good as well, I thought, for the to generally give the right feel. But yeah, I mean, having read the comic... It's not the comic, and so therefore I wouldn't really want to watch a sanitized version of the comic. Because he's more of a superhero here than he is in the comic.
Thoughts on the OVA then?
The OVA's pretty close to sort of the first half before it gets really good. And then they sort of did an OV of Amon, the Dark Side of Devil Man, which was like a retelling of the ending, which wasn't so good.
Oh, right.
And the OVA is definitely no good at all. I think I'm pretty sure somebody involved, either the producer or the director, sort of apologised for it.
Oh, right, bloody hell.
Correctly.
So what's your thoughts on Devil Lady? I was reading that a little bit.
Devil Lady, I'm trying to think. I haven't seen enough of the series to get a feeling for it. I've seen, I think, episodes 5, 6, or 7 or something like that. At Minami once.
Right.
I generally quite liked it, but not enough to want to go and buy it, I don't think, at the time. But, I mean, I'd like to see the comic come out in the West. I mean, I think there's some sort of copyright or licensing issue surrounding some of these, because I think Mazinga's got a similar problem where they weren't allowed to use the original Mazinga design in some other things later on, even though they'd invented it.
I would like to read it, actually, Devil Man. I think I'd probably get quite into it.
I mean, it's a short series. It's only like 5 volumes, so...
Oh, even better.
And it really should be out, because it's... I'd say it's probably his best work, particularly once it gets to the second half and sort of takes a turn for the darker and actually starts to have something to say. As opposed to just having fights with demons.
Yeah, chaos.
Yeah, anyway, following Devilman came Mazinger Z.
From the same year, I believe.
Yes, where pretty much the giant robot genre as we know it was invented.
Yeah, hats off in that regard, I'll say that.
I quite like this, and it, I kind of tempted to see more, but again, I've seen some of the comic, and the comic sort of tells the story quicker
and better,
and Shin Mazinger sort of retells it, adding various bits in a great fashion, and you could probably just stick with that.
Yeah, I've seen a few episodes from that, and I feel I've watched this before. I don't know where, so I feel like I've watched this like a million times, this the first episode of this. Because is Shin Mazinger the exact same kind of opening?
Episode 2 is kind of similar, yeah.
Right, that's probably what I've seen. And but yeah, I've got to say, it's probably one of my favourite villains, the WM2, the double-headed snakey thing.
Yeah.
I'm doing hand motions like I've got two snakes in a minute. But no, I think that's just such a cool design, and it's very good.
There's lots of good designs in it, but there's one design where is Juzo Kabuto. Yeah, so it's Koji Kabuto, who's this teenager who inherits his granddad's giant robots to protect the world from Dr. Hell and his what are they called? What are these blooming robots called? Mechanical beasts, that's it. That he's going to use to take over the world. And, yeah, so that's pretty much the plot.
Yeah. But it's important to mention that to inherit this robot, the grandfather dies.
Yeah.
And I've never seen two people forget about such an important family death so quick. They're quite upset, and then all of a sudden they're like, cool, we've got a big robot.
That's just what I was going to say as well. And it's kind of like,
I was just gobsmacked. They're pretty much like moving his dead body to get the controls. And
wow, a giant robot, how do we pilot this? And it takes well, the good thing about it is they have no idea really how to pilot it as well. It's like they get into it, start it up, and then it's completely out of control for the rest of the episode.
Oh, what a
bizarre. But yeah, Juzo Kabuto, the grandfather, he's been heavily redesigned in the TV show. In the comic and also in Shin Mazinger, he's like some sort of hideous troll.
Okay.
But he's like almost like a Hanna-Barbera design in the cartoon. He looks completely out of place with everybody else. I don't know why he's the one who, where they thought, oh, it's just too hard to draw him as ugly as he appears in the comic. What was going on with their minds there?
I mean, I gather he's only in the first episode, so it wouldn't take that much effort, surely. Or does he come back from the grave? Or
I don't know, I've not seen the rest of the series. Right. But I thought it was quite good action for its age, and compared to some of the other shows. Well,
oh yeah, it's alright, yeah.
I think it's better animated than Devilman, and it's definitely better animated than the next show we'll talk about. But now here's the thing, because obviously there's two people die in this episode. No, one person died in the Devilman episode. But fairly quickly. Well, two maybe if Akira had died, but then he came back to life.
Yeah.
But yeah, a maid dies, so the Kabuto family maid gets killed by Baron Ashura. Who are we? I want to say Baron Ashura. Yeah, that's another reason why it works quite well, is because Baron Ashura, who's a half man, half woman, literally half man, half woman, is a great creation for.
It's very clever, I think. Very clever. Like it cuts between the voices and stuff, depending on where the camera's at or what have you. But I like that, yeah.
Yeah, so the maid dies, and then Ashura comes in, demands to know where Juzo Kabuto is. She tells him, and then they kill her. A bit harsh. And then, Kabuto dies. And I was comparison I wanted to make was, if Pokemon was made like this, because this is basically the equivalent to a Pokemon show today, it would be like the first episode of Pokemon would have Team Rocket kill Professor Oak and Delia Ketchum, but then with Professor Oak's dying breath would give Pikachu to Ash, and then Ash would just sort of pop it all off.
Off he goes.
Off we go. How do I get this Pokemon to work?
That'd be brilliant. That'd be brilliant. But unfortunately, it didn't work like that. Mind you, I like Professor Oak, with that said. I don't want to see him get popped off. Nice guy.
Next along is Dororon Enmakun, the original TV series, which was in 1973 in October.
And for me, this was a strange watch. After seeing Mirror Mirror, it was kind of, well, I thought, nah, it can't be any good, because I'd imagine a lot of the things that were good in this were just transferred over in the new series. And I was kind of right. It's, I don't know. I'll tell you what, there's a poor mouse at the start.
I've got that in my notes as well.
Oh, it gets caught in like a, what do you call them? A bloody clock tower and all the cogs. Cogs and gears. And it gets slowly squashed further and further. And to think, that's pretty gory. Don't get me wrong, I'm not squeamish as I say, but bloody hell, poor thing.
And for no real plot point either.
Nah, just to say that it's kind of a bit of a horror series, maybe we'll kill a mouse at the start. That's what Evil Dead needs, a mouse death at in the opening scene.
This is the thing which struck me as having the worst animation of all of these shows. And there's a pretty significant character changes from the comic and obviously from Enmakun Mirror Mirror, in that Yukiko is much more like a nagging big sister.
In this one?
In this, yeah. Enma doesn't seem... the most he gets to lusting after her is calling her Yukiko-chan, which she gets annoyed at and tells him off. But she definitely comes across as more like Lucy from Peanuts than she does in the actual comic. And Kaperu is actually competent in this series. And he looks much bigger and tougher and burlier than the...
He looks rubbish. Sorry, but he looked... What did he look like in the manga?
Pretty much as he does in Mirror Mirror.
That's so good. That's good news.
Pretty much almost like the self-portrait Gona Guy does of himself, but just as a kappa.
But oh, I hate this. This is what really put me off. Because... in Mirror Mirror, he's a good character, and I like the look of him. And then to see him just reduced to this fat lump. and obviously Shaperu the Hat, or Shaperu, whatever he's called.
Yeah, he's pretty much the same, yeah. Shapo Gigi, I think.
That's the one, and he's brilliant. I love him.
Sure, or Shapo G, I think. Not GG at the end.
And though, another thing I dislike about this, it misses... I can't remember the guy's name. Doctor, the long-running joke from Mirror Mirror.
Yes, I know what you mean. Doctor Demon or something.
Yeah. And how long did this run for?
Mm-hmm. Let me just get to that. It ran. It ran for 25 episodes.
Not too bad.
No, it was. They did like so many different manga series of it as well. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different strips were running.
Jesus Christ.
So I think that was the point at which they thought, let's milk this for all it's worth.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And it's still popular today with Mirror Mirror.
Yeah. The starting a couple of weeks later in 1973 was Cutie Honey.
This is...
This was one I didn't watch again. I'd already seen the first episode. I didn't get time to watch the first episode again. But this was the first time you'd seen Cutie Honey.
And it was quite a surprise because, as many people know, I've said in the past that I like fights between blokes. I don't really like women protagonists. But this is an exception. And I'm pleased to say it's an exception. It's just... sassy is the best word to describe the series. It's pretty sassy.
That is quite a, there's a few shows which I describe as sassy. Not many out of this lot, but around this time, there was a few sort of sassy female characters wandering around. There's Tatsunoku Show, whose name escapes me at the moment, which has got another, not the female lead, but the sort of the girlfriend type character is another very sassy character. And has similar sort of fashions to Cutie Honey.
In a fashion sense, is fantastic. I must say, if I was a woman, I'd so be wearing those clothes. And she also reacts better to her father's death than what the people did in...
And also the revelation that she's not actually a human being at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because we should guess it's about an android who goes to Catholic school and her father is murdered by the criminal organisation Pantherclaw. And on the same day that he's murdered, that she also learns that she's actually an shape-changing android.
And I've got to say, I don't know whether I'm over-reading this or over-analysing it, but it may sound so ridiculous. The characters are kind of believable. I know, like, I'm not saying I could see them walking down the street, but their interactions are a hell of a lot better than what's in the likes of Mazinger. Like, they're just better. And this is, without a doubt, maybe spoiling it for the rest of the shows, but this is my favourite of the lot. Without a doubt. It was a breath of fresh air for me. Because as I say, I'm not usually a big fan of female leads or anything. But this was good. This was good. And the action's pretty well done as well.
Yeah, the thing that struck me when I first saw this first episode is that it just feels like it's got a constant momentum.
Yes, it's going somewhere.
Something's happening all the time and it's moving and rolling and towards the end of the episode. So there's Miss Elphon, that's the character's name, who looks a lot like Topachiri Sensei, but is female.
And is that the one who gets, he or she gets to look up Honey's skirt?
I think so, yeah. It's the one with the moustache. There's two teachers. There's one who's really strict, whose name escapes me, and then there's Miss Alphon, who lusts after Honey. Which, in the comic, everybody lusts after Honey. Every single character.
I lust after Honey. I do, and I'm not even in it. One of the villains, Miss Blackclaw, she has a tiger's arm for a head. Like the claw head?
Yeah.
And that just, at first I thought, this looks ridiculous, but then I soon forgot about it with the great action and sassy costumes. But I do like our costumes, I know that sounds totally ridiculous, but it looks good.
Good. Right, there's a 90s OVA, there's Cutie Honey Flash, which was a straightforward shoujo series in the 90s. Then there's the Cutie Honey live-action film. You said you wanted to do a live-action episode sometime. That might be one to do. And then there's tying in with that was Re-Cutie Honey, which was a 3-episode OVA series, which I really like. And then most recently there was Cutie Honey The Live, which was a live-action TV show.
Was that any good?
I'm trying to think. I've seen the first episode. It's both simultaneously not very good and also fairly faithful to the comic, at least in terms of characterisation. It might be worth watching. We might talk about it as well if we do the... At least watching a couple of episodes, if we do the film as well, to just
prepare. Because I was about to say, I could actually see myself sitting down and watching this 1973 series. I don't know how far it goes and what happens in the overall story, but it's alright. It's pretty good.
It runs for only 25 episodes, so it's not...
Not too much of a chore, yeah. And by this point, because I kind of underestimated how long it would take me to watch these, and I thought, oh, I'll watch them a bit closer to the episode, blah, blah, blah. And I made a big mistake of needing to watch, like, 6 straight off the belt. And that was a big mistake. A big mistake.
Yeah, particularly as we were into a large chunk of giant robot shows.
Especially because and I didn't watch them in order, so...
Many of which are sequels.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
And so the next is Get a Robo, which was mainly Ken Ishikawa's project, more than Gona Guy's. And this introduces combining robots and a team of robot pilots. We have Ryoma, Hayato, and Musashi, the plucky martial artist who's sort of the generic hero that we've seen up to this point. Hayato, who is the cool loner, who doesn't say much, doesn't show much emotion.
He can kick a ball very good.
And Musashi, who is the fat lad. And a judo master. He can throw people really far as well. And he has a unique sense of fashion.
But it's important to say that I watched this after the sequel show. So I did this totally wrong. But yeah.
They are assembled.
Just clouded my judgment.
Yeah, so they're brought together by Professor Sayotome, who is one of the best. He is definitely one of the best professors in these shows.
I can't remember which one he is, to be
honest.
He's
the one who looks like he hasn't slept at all, with the dark hair and the moustache and the stubble.
Ah, oh, yes, I know.
He's the one who looks a bit seedy.
And we do like seed here. We like seed.
So they were planning to use these robots for deep space exploration, but then they get attacked by the Dinosaur Empire. And his daughter gets into trouble, so these three guys who are all in love with her decide to pilot the real Getter Robo, which has got weapons.
Awesome weapons.
To fight off the dinosaur who's attacking, what's her name, Michiru Sayotome. And they see off the first dinosaur, but then, oh no, by the end of the episode, three more dinosaurs have shown up. And these are giant robot dinosaurs. These are robot dinosaurs, and these are actually being piloted, I think, aren't they? Whereas...
I can't remember if that's...
I think,
meant.
If I remember correctly, yeah, there's like a little... The first one's got like a little pterodactyl man piloting it, I think.
Pterodactyl.
If I remember correctly.
And also, whereas... Get a Robo has a tomahawk. And I just think that's such a cool weapon. But
and we'll come across Kenny Shikawa's obsession with tomahawks later on in another show we'll be talking about.
So who's your favourite of the three pilots?
In this first episode, Hayato.
Yeah, definitely. As I say, just watch it for the where he kicks a football. Just amazing. It's fantastic. And that just it really cracked me up, actually. I was laughing. And then he gets thrown by Musashi and he manages to just land like nothing happened. So he's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd say this is the best. After Cutie Honey, this was probably my favourite. And I think it's got probably the best animation of the shows, particularly in the opening sequence. Just that little... Because they're all running towards the camera, and then Musashi, like, just this little stumble the first time he's running. I think, I'm just pleased, so pleased somebody went to the effort to put that in, because it's just
Yeah, this was alright, but as I say, I did it in the wrong order by watching something later on that we're going to mention before this.
Yes. Never mind. But yeah, that's Getter Robo for you. Next was Great Mazinger.
This reads me notes here, because as I say, these just blurred into one. At this point, I was hating my life. I really was. As I said to Brian, I was actually starting to dream. Like I went to bed. I can't even remember what I was dreaming about, but I know it was mech-related, and it was just nonsense.
Ugh. Yeah, so Great Mazinger's a sequel to Mazinger Z, unsurprisingly, and it follows a film in 1974, which was called Mazinger vs. the Great General of Darkness, which introduced the Great Mazinger robot. Great Mazinger is piloted by Tetsuya Tsurugi, who was raised by Koji Kabuto's dad, Kenzo Kabuto, who Koji thought was dead. And he'd been busy making his own robot, Great Mazinger, to battle the Mycenae Empire, who are the guys behind... Dr. Hell found the relics of theirs, which made his beasts and led to Mazinger Z. And anyway, they turn up and want to conquer the world.
I'm not a fan of the villains in this.
It's a lot of giants with heads in their chests.
Yeah,
I
don't know. It looks strange. It looks very strange.
The main thing which struck me is that everybody in this show is jerks, except perhaps Shiro, because Shiro shows up, as does Boss from Mazinger Z, who you didn't see in the first episode of Mazinger Z, so you've not been introduced to Boss yet. who's the juvenile delinquent who built his own robot out of spare parts.
That guy. Right, yeah.
But everybody in this show is jerks. So you've got... you've got Tetsuya, you've got his sort of girlfriend, Jun. You've got... So they're kind of jerks to each other. Like, Jun pretends that she's twisted her ankle in one point to make Tetsuya feel guilty. So then Tetsuya gets angry and tries to beat her up.
This is a horrible lesson for children.
And then, I think Boss see Great Mazinger fly over top, and he goes, oh, right, because he's angry that Koji isn't around, so he hasn't got anyone to bully. So he sees Great Mazinger fly over, and he decides, oh, I'll go and bully Tetsuya instead. And then you've got Kenzo, who's hidden the fact that he's still alive from his children. And it's not until Shiro gets hurt that he's going to have to reveal that he's actually alive to one of his children. But yeah, it's like, oh, he kind of deserved being attacked by the Great General of Darkness.
Yeah, they were doing a good job. I like Tatsuya's scarf as well. It's pretty flamboyant.
He's a bit over-designed, though, his armour. His hat that he wears to pilot his... I mean, Great Mazinger itself looks great, but he looks kind of over-designed in his outfit. Which I don't know whether that's a reaction to, like, the Tatsunoku heroes. Because I think they were... At this point, when did Gatchaman come out? Much before this, I think.
I've got down here the fights are a lot more brutal in this than Zed as well. So I can't remember why I put that, because I can't remember which fight was which. I'm kind of getting this muddled up with the one with all the dinosaurs. I'm trying to think. But I've got, this was a lot more brutal. With the war beasts and their huge faces in their chests. But yeah, this was alright. As I say, I can't remember how this ended. Like, what does he fight in this? I'm trying to remember.
No, I can't even remember myself either. It obviously wasn't that. All I mainly remember is, Boss Shira getting hurt and everyone being jerks.
I like that Boss guy and his robot. It kind of reminded us of, with me reading Pluto, I can't even remember the robot, what it's called in it.
Oh, I know which one you mean, yeah.
The woodcutter one.
Yes.
It looks very similar to that. Looks very similar to that. But yeah, I like that character, even though I didn't know who he was. But he was alright.
Okay, next up is Getarobo G in 1975.
Yeah.
Which is the sequel, where we find out that Musashi is dead. Spoiler alert. Something over 30 years old, I think the time has passed. Yeah, so it starts off with them I think it's funeral in the first episode. Yeah, I'm sure they are, because I showed a clip of the American dub where they hadn't even bothered doing Getarobo, so the start of the series opened with somebody you never met being dead. And then we introduce Benkei, who is similar to Musashi, but not exactly the same. He's another big, burly guy. He's basically the new fat lad. But he's got a slightly different personality. He's always hungry. And I've written indomitable stupidity.
See, I've got written a real stand-up guy.
He is that as well. Because he's despite the fact they're being attacked by demons, he spends most of the episode worried that he's broken this kid's aeroplane.
That's just nice. That's just...
To the point where he's worrying about getting it flying again in the middle of a fight with the giant demon.
Oh goodness!
And they lock him in a zero G machine. They forget about him,
and he just falls asleep. I think.
I think this is funnier. Well, the first episode was pretty funny with Musashi being afraid of the dinosaurs. But yeah, I think this is the point where you were complaining that every episode seemed the same.
Yeah.
The second half of this episode is very much similar to the second half of Getarobo's first episode, in that Michiru gets in trouble again, decides to go and fight this demon on her own in her jet fighter, which forces all the boys to have to get into their new Getarobo G, struggle to combine it again, as they struggled to combine it in the first episode of Get Robo.
I thought I was in some horrible nightmare at this point. I thought I was just locked in time, just re-watching those three buffoons struggle to fit pieces together. But Get a Robo in this one does have a tomahawk boomerang, which is quite an invention.
We'll get along to attacks in a minute. When we talk about the next show, which is UFO Grandizer, or Goldrack, or Grandizer. Yes, this is the third in the Mazinger trilogy. This time it is about Duke Fleed, an alien who has arrived on Earth. And he is battling the people who conquered his... Did he come from that planet? I can't remember. Yeah, so they're fighting King Vega and his people.
Is that name mentioned in the first episode? Because I did.
I don't
not
think
remember.
So. No, I don't think they did.
Right.
They've attacked the planet Fleed, and the only survivor of the royal family, Duke Fleed, has stolen Grandizer and gone to Earth. And Koji Kabuto turns up. Now flying the TFO, a flying saucer.
What does a T stand for?
I don't think they mentioned it in the show, and I can't see it on this page I'm looking at.
I thought maybe at first it was
a typo. Or maybe
they
did. But I thought maybe it might be terrestrial flying object. Maybe.
Ah.
I don't know.
See, that's linked with the thing that just... I found totally bizarre. He's flying around in space, like in the sky, in this like pretty alien-looking thing.
Yeah.
And he sees these other flying things, and straight away he assumes it's aliens. I don't understand how, kind of, it just for him it should be just the norm to see this great technology. Yet he just assumes it's aliens outright. I just didn't get that at all.
So, well, yeah, you would think if first time it was man-made.
Exactly.
Then the second time it was extra-dimensional technology. Oh, it must be aliens this time. so you've got Duke Fleed, who he looks very much like a Tatsunoko Pro-type hero. He looks like he should have come out of Gatchaman rather than a Gonagai show, in that he's a differently sort of handsome to...
That's the guy who works on the farm, isn't it?
Yes,
okay, right.
Yeah, so they all work on this farm, which seems like a cowboy town, even though they're in Japan. And the farm is run by a guy called, what's his name? Danbai, who is kind of based on a character from Abashiri Family, and also there's another character in Kyuji Honey, who's based on the same character.
And he's hilarious as well.
Yeah, this is a show where it looks like a bunch of characters from different cartoons have all wandered in together. So you've got Duke Fleed, who looks like a Tatsunoko Pro character. You've got Danbai and his son, Goro, who look like they've come out of a Gonagai gag manga. You've got Koji Kabuto, who looks like a slightly older version of himself from Mazinger. And then you've got, what's the professor called? The professor's like really bland looking.
I can't remember his name.
No, I can't either. But the professor and Danbai's daughter are kind of forgettable in terms of what they look like. But the other thing which struck me, I can't remember the fight beyond the fact that Grandizer has so many attacks.
Oh, obviously. He has a utility belt just for almost just every possibility. He has something. He has something for it.
Oh, yeah, I wrote down, how many attacks do you need, dude, when I was watching it.
Oh, but I thought it took a while to get going, I felt. But then when it did, I thought it was pretty good. Of the bunch, I quite enjoyed it. Cowboys and aliens, you know, it works.
Goldrake, that's the name I was looking for. Yes, Goldrake in France and in Quebec, and then re-imported back to France. And then in Italy, it was Goldrake. That was the name I was trying to remember.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It takes a while to get going, because if you thought Hayato was moody, Duke Fleed takes it to another level, and that another level is breaking out his guitar.
That bit was quite strange, yeah. Because he decides to play for... It's a good... Well, not a good chunk of the episode, but in terms of screen time, he's jamming away for a while until he snaps his string. I was pleased when that happened. But, I just thought the father character, because how would you describe him? He just looks so...
He's like a dwarf, and his moustache is out of control. Or is it his eyebrows? I can't remember which way around.
Everything's out of control, I think.
And his son looks like similarly drawn, out of control, sketchy. But yeah, they look like... They're very cartoony compared to everybody else in the show, particularly compared to Duke Fleed, who seems overly realistically drawn for a Gona guy.
Especially in some of the close-ups, he's got attention to detail on some of his face, like his eyebrows and stuff. It's fantastic. That was a photograph. But at this time in the world, you think that everyone was going crazy for aliens, and so they thought would.
Well, yeah, he'd done a film earlier in the year called The Great Battle of the Flying Saucers.
Right.
But yeah, I think people are going, so you've got the Devilman stuff where he's in the Himalayas, and that kind of ties in around the same time that you've got Babel 2 coming out as well. I think that's all slightly influenced by what's it called? The Eric Daniken books and stuff, the nonsense he was spewing about gods being ancient spacemen and things and looking at ancient civilizations. So I think that was the fad early on with Devilman.
Right.
And then, yeah, I can guess that UFOs might have been a fad again around that time. And we'll get onto another fad on the very next show, which is Steel Jeeg.
What fad's this? Let's see.
Around this time, there was a lot of racing anime coming up. And I think they'd just had some big racing thing in Japan or were just about to. But yeah, around 76, 77, 78, there's a fair few racing anime show up. Because I hadn't realised. I mean, I knew of Steel Jeeg, and I think I'd seen the first couple episodes of the recent revival they did of it, which was actually a sequel.
Was that any good?
To this? It seemed pretty good. I need to finish watching it at some point. But the thing is, I'd seen the toy when I was a kid. Somebody had the toy, and the toy was excellent. Because obviously the big part of this is selling toys, at least particularly in the robot side of things. And so the show is heavily... Magnets is the thing in this show. The lead... Well, Magnets, a bit of Evel Knievel, a bit of interest in racing going on there.
Is there any tomahawks in this? I forget.
No tomahawks in this as far as I remember. Ooh. But yeah, the toy had like magnetic joints. And so you could pull it apart and attach the joints in different ways.
Hmm.
And I think somebody had brought it back from a holiday in Spain or somewhere. Or wherever.
You were green with envy.
I was green with it. I can still remember seeing it. He also brought back some books which got pictures of some of these giant robots in it. So,
How old were you at this
point? I'm trying to think. I would have been 9, maybe.
So at 8. This point, you obviously didn't know what Steel Jeeg actually
but
was.
No. And at the point when Jeeg was out, I would have been 1. But
So that makes it even more exciting to think what you could have...
Oh, yeah. I did used to have a Grandizer keyring as well, long before Grandizer was. My brother brought back some robot keyrings from a trip to Wales on the seaside. He must have had a Mazinga one, I guess, or maybe a Getarovo one, and I had a Grandizer one. It was like little metal keyrings with sort of loose attached joints so that you could move their arms about a little and the legs about a little. I used to have that for ages before I even knew what it was.
The irony. I think we'll now be discussing it however many layers yet.
Jeeg's a mix of all sorts of things. Yeah, so first of all, I need to go and check, when did the $6 million man come out? Because he's a cyborg to start off with.
And what I liked about this is Steel Jeeg is a lot more dynamic in his motion and stuff, and instead of these big clunky robots, and I just, that was a breath of fresh air once again for me after watching all these lot. So I felt better.
I did like this a lot. I wrote a lot of notes on this one. Your main character,
Hiroshi Shiba.
That's the guy. Yeah, he's a race car driver, and he one of his evil rivals tries to kill him. Pretty much.
God, I've just looked and remembered something. Go on, and it'll lead perfectly into what.
And he gets hit by a car. It doesn't hurt him at all, and then he just shrugs all that off, ignores it.
Oh, see, that's not the thing that made me laugh. That's pretty funny. But the fact that they use a banana skin gun.
Oh yes, so I forgot how they tried to kill him. Out of a rocket launcher, yes. They got some sort of banana-based mortar that's slightly racist. I presume he's supposed to be South American. He's called Pedro, and he's a complete idiot.
Yeah, this just
he hides under a cloth and launches a bazooka from under the cloth, which shoots out a banana, which Shiva's car hits, goes out of control.
If he'd shot an actual rocket from it, it might have did something a bit better. But bananas tend not to.
They probably couldn't get taken to prison or arrested for using a banana.
True.
Meanwhile, his dad, now Professor Shiba, his dad, looks like the offspring of Desperate Dan and Lord Snooty. He has a huge chin and he wears a monocle. And he's been attacked by, I can't remember what the Empire's called, but there's this woman called Himika who sort of rules an ancient civilization in Japan, and she can animate inanimate objects, specifically clay statues is her main deal. And she sends one of her henchmen off to attack Professor Shiba because he's discovering all this. And he dies. But not before he can reveal, he can give a, is it a medallion to his son?
Yeah, I think it's got Jeeg's head on it as well.
It has, yeah.
Jeeg's face.
It starts talking to him when he's riding his motorcycle and explaining that he's not really, he talks with him in his dad's voice, but his dad, thinking that he was going to be killed, has uploaded his brain to a computer.
Good thinking. Great thinking.
And at their HQ called Build Base, which is, I think, the best HQ name.
Build Base.
Oh, and there's actually a mother in this show. This is the first time I think we've actually seen any of these heroes have a mother.
I can't even remember what she does.
Oh, she's just there, I think.
Oh, that explains why I can't remember her.
I think he's got a sister as well, hasn't he?
Yes, yeah.
And maybe a little brother as well?
There's a little kid running around, I think.
Yeah, it's a bit of Speed Racer in there as well. A bit of Evel Knievel in the way he dresses with his white motorcycle jacket.
He's a pretty cool-looking character.
Oh, and there's Big Shooter.
Who's which Big is Shooter? The most...
That's the thing the girl uses to, because turn into Jeeg. Yeah, so he turns out he's a cyborg and he can turn into Jeeg. He needs help with this jet called Big Shooter, which sort of sends the other parts.
Ah, yes, that's correct.
And the way they launch Big Shooter is the most convoluted launching sequence. It's like they've got to shoot this rocket out of their build base. It's going to go through like this insane roller coaster ride before it, and then shoot out through water.
I like the way he transforms, though. He slaps his fists together and screams, yeah. Steel Jeeg.
Oh, yeah, he gives him his gloves as well with the magnet. And so, yeah, he connects his magnets on his gloves.
And all the pieces come and, you know.
Yeah, so it feels more like a, rather than the giant robot shows, it feels more like the Kamen Rider we've been watching. There's a motorcycle, he turns into a superhero, but a giant superhero with magnetic arms which attach to his head. Yeah, because he turns into the head, doesn't he? And then all the other bits attach to him.
Yeah, I'm getting a picture of it now because I honestly can't remember what he looks like. I've just got this one big blur of Mazingers and Jeegs and... Oh, yes, that's the one. I like the look of that. I think it looks pretty good.
yeah, I'd like, I mean, I might watch more of this. Just to see what other craziness happens. And just to see that big shooter launch again, because it's...
And you said there's a new series of this.
Yes, fairly recently, in the past 10 years, there's been one. And it's a sequel.
That'd be worth checking out, if... Yeah. And who are the bad guys in this again? Because... Oh, no, it's the Jigen. The woman, I...
Yeah,
Jigen Science, like, whatever it's called.
I'm sure she must be based on something, but what she reminded me of is the female wrestler Akira Hakoto. But I'm sure they're just based off the same thing in what they sort of her face paint looking like Himika. I quite like when Himika was revived as well, because she sort of appeared out of stone. That was But the other thing which I've written down is that the preview for the next episode shows you everything which happens in the next episode.
See, at this point, I was... As soon as the episode finished, bang, straight on the next one. None of these preview rubbish.
It was a really long preview, and it showed you pretty much everything which happened. It sort of lead up to the fight itself, how the fight was going to end.
So, at this point, who would win of the bunch? Who's the hardest robot?
Oh, blimey, I'm not getting into that debate. I'm sure the Get a Robo people would say Get a Robo.
Because Cutie probably... Honey can't really stand a chance.
No.
Devilman might be... I don't know what kind of...
There was a Mazinger Z versus Devilman film.
Oh, yes, I remember. I read that, yeah. And who wins?
I imagine they probably team up in the end. I mean, Grendizer does have an awful lot of attacks. So I don't know whether that makes him more powerful or the fact that these attacks are less powerful than he needs to make so many of.
True. That is a debate that I'm not really that bothered about who's hardest, really.
Anyway, Battle Hawk, live action show with manga interludes. This is a superhero show about three kids who turn into the Battle Hawks.
One, this has got a fat lad as well.
It does, yeah. It has a bland hero, a bland heroine, and a fat lad who makes unfunny jokes.
And if I was to make a joke and I was him, I would just point at my outfit. Because their outfit, my God.
They've got very tomahawk-based outfits.
Yeah, yeah.
Since before they've been given their superpowers, they're wandering around in clothes which are covered in axes.
A big axe gang. But I think the opening scene of... No, it's not the very first scene. The first scene's actually all right. It's... basically, their grandfather, he's... you might know his name, do you?
I can't remember.
I tend not to jot the names down if they're rubbish. But no, he was all right, actually.
He was... There was about two good actors in this, and one was the grandfather and one was the villain.
Ah, well, you see, because... Basically, the grandfather's this, he's like, must be famous across the world, I don't really know why, but he fights, these guys come to fight him, try to beat him, he beats them. And then it leads on to this terrible thing where you see the three kids driving along in...
In their wacky cars.
Wacky races, yeah. And I just wanted to burst out laughing, especially when you see what they're wearing, goodness gracious me.
And they don't look like fighters either.
No.
Not a single one of them. There's a lot of wandering around in docks as well. The entire show seems to take place around the docks.
You can film there for free, so I imagine that maybe had an impact. And this must be a kid's show once again, I take it?
Yes. There's a dead dog hanging from the tree, though, which I wrote a note down, which took me by surprise. I thought, because they come home and they find their dog has been killed and is hanging from a tree. And also has apparently been stuffed as well, because it's completely solid and stuck in a standing up pose.
Is it hung from a tree or something? Or...
Yes, it is, yeah. Because they walk past the house and they notice blood dripping on them. And then they look up and they go, it's our dog.
And what's worse is their pond full of carp are now floating on the top, the dead as well.
Yeah, it's been poisoned. So there's this terrorist organisation whose leader had been trained by the granddad and now has likes to accessorize extensively in his outfit. His outfit is insane.
There's something to look at everywhere. It's busy. Busy is a word you're looking for.
So they have a terrible fight, because the fight choreography in this show is just dreadful. Oh, first of all, there's a manga interlude, isn't there, to describe what the terrorist organisation is.
Yeah, I pretty much turned off at that point. Just blanked out.
They've got, like, the typical monster of the week, who's, like, this Grim Reaper one in this episode.
Oh, goodness, yes.
So they pretty much kill the granddad, but not enough killing to... He still manages to both die and get away, and get in a boat and row across a river before finally dying and handing the kids these magic tomahawks he got from a visit to America.
And they're bloody tiny.
Yes, which when they throw them in the air, they combine and turn them into Battle Hawk, Queen Hawk, and Big Hawk.
Guess who Big Hawk is?
Axe-based superheroes. Oh. And as they're axe-based superheroes, they finish off the bad guy by decapitating him.
And it's probably one of the best decapitations you'll see ever.
It's pretty good for something which just, for a bad guy, looks like he's wearing a
fancy
red monkey mask with a skull attached to the front of it.
And there's a lot of smoke machines in this show as well. Earlier on, there's just any excuse for getting smoke pumped into a room. It's there. Oh, and does the grandfather die at the end?
I think, because he says they want to help him, and he does the typical, no, it's too late for me. With my last breath, I need to give you these magic tomahawks.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is another Ken Ishikawa thing. He created it.
So what had that other guy done out of the other shows that we've got here?
The Getter Robos.
Right, okay.
That's his main thing. And finally, Aztec Kaiser, which I didn't get a chance to rewatch the first episode. But poor you.
I've even got a written note for this. The rest were just typed in on Word, whereas this A4 paper. This is if it wasn't for Cutie Honey, this was without a doubt my favourite of the lot.
It is pretty good.
Definitely out of the live action ones. Obviously, there's only two to choose from, so it's a bit unfair. But it's about something you're quite passionate about, I believe.
Yes, professional wrestling.
Yeah. And 1976, and I've got written down, it begins relatively light-hearted, all in good humour, and then it just descends into something horrific. Because it starts, and I think this was the first one I watched of the entire bunch, actually. And so I didn't really know what to expect. And it gets scary. If kids are watching this and not getting scared, kids must have been hard in the 70s. They must have been tough nuts in the 70s. Honestly, I was almost shaking in my boots sat watching it myself. But basically, someone's brother, is it the brother? He got killed by this...
Strong Ricky.
That's his
name.
By the
Dark Mist Wrestling Federation.
You'd think the police and the authorities would have something to say about this, wouldn't you?
Right, if it happens in the wrestling ring.
What happened in the ring stays in the ring.
Exactly.
And it's just... I've got loads of notes here, but I don't know what to pick out from, really. But basically, Joe Kanzaki, he is the main guy, the protagonist. And nobody knows... Oh, no, I think we should discuss the villains, actually.
Go for it. They
turn up. We have Satan Demon, the leader of that group that I forgot the name of.
Just in case you weren't sure that he was evil.
What a name. And he looks so damn scary. And he's got this glare, and he's just, you don't want to have him in your nightmares. And then there's Red Bloody Hell. And he's like this horrible harlequin fetus of a character. He's all horrible. Bloody Hornet. Which one was Bloody Hornet again?
Oh, I can't remember.
Can't like
remember.
It's been a while since
right. I didn't get a chance to.
And then there's Luar, who is the overseer of the entire thing. He's the overall leader of the band of villains. And they basically just want to go around killing other wrestlers. For what reason is it? I don't even know. It's become the best federation.
I think it's just because they're evil. What other reason do you need?
And I really enjoyed it because it's Shun. It's his brother who got killed by the group, and you think he's just this weakling, and he turns out to be Aztec Kaiser.
Yes.
Does he transform into him?
He does, yeah. He's also got a cool trike. the one thing it's got going for it, particularly, is it has loads of cameos from wrestlers at the time, and Antonio Inoki shows up and gets some actual lines, of course. Because
who's that guy? Who's
he's the guy with the big chin.
Oh, is that the not the reporter? Is it?
No, the reporter. No. The reporter goes to speak to him at the end of the episode. Because he wanders through the gym where you can get loads
yes.
of cameos from wrestlers in.
Ah, yes, I remember now.
To see what he thinks about Aztec Kaiser. But the reporter is the best character.
Oh, without a doubt.
He's just like this really oily-looking guy who sort of ties all the story together because he's wandering through asking the questions that the viewers might have.
But it's a pretty surreal... Like, the music's really, like... 70s horror film, and if this was on a late night, I wouldn't be surprised, because I don't know, it's very surreal and creepy, and everything about it's just, there's baseball, there's a brilliant scene with Shun, the main character, he's just hitting baseballs at these kids, because he's obviously annoyed that his brother's dead, so he's just cracking baseballs at these poor youngsters, and they're dodging it, and that's just the best scene. And the most important thing is when Aztec Kaiser fights the villain in the end, it becomes animated.
Indeed it does.
And I think it's a nice way of doing it, actually. Because, I don't know, is there anything else that does that well?
I'm sure there is something, but it doesn't spring to mind.
Right.
I'm sure I've seen it being done before, but it doesn't exactly spring to mind as when it happened or what it was in. Right. The thing I liked about, at least the first episode, I'm looking at screenshots of the later episodes and I'm not sure if they do it or not in the later ones, is that you get like the typical tokusatsu superhero show fight, but it takes place in a wrestling ring in this first episode.
Yeah.
And there's an American promotion called Chikara who have like very over-the-top storylines and sort of kid-friendly superhero-type characters. And when I first saw this, it struck me as if Chikara ever got TV, they should, rather than go for a typical wrestling show format, this would be the ideal format for them. Mm. In actually having villains turn up and actually have like a superhero storyline, but then the fights take place in a wrestling ring, rather than, as it unfortunately appears to be from these screenshots I'm looking at, the typical location for these types of shows where the fights take place in a gravel pit. Or a quarry.
Or a dock.
Well, at least that was the thing. It did strike me as the dock being slightly different too. Quick. Down to the quarry for a fight.
But no, I think this is good. And how long did this run for?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm guessing probably just a year, if that.
I don't know whether it would start to get samey and annoying, but if the first episode... I think everyone should watch this, because it's so bizarre, and it's kind of surprising that it works. Because...
Go on.
No, as I say, it feels really lighthearted at the start, and there's a kid cheering on his favourite wrestler and stuff, and then there's just blood. Somebody gets hit and there's blood, and I just can't believe kids watch this.
Well, there's blood in wrestling. People used to watch Well, true, it used to be bloody wrestling.
Used to be.
In trying to make it to appeal to kids, they took the blood out, and then I think in WWE, and that probably makes it appeal less to kids. Makes it appeal more to parents, probably, but I'm sure the kids were like, yeah, blood, excellent.
Boo to parents. Boo.
Stone Cold's completely covered in blood.
But it basically becomes like a gladiatorial ring at some points. There's kids in the crowd, and they don't care that people are getting killed. They don't care. Why would you?
You watched the Tiger Mask, first episode of Tiger Mask.
Yes,
well.
I did.
How did it compare to that? It's obviously it's sort of a similar storyline, but perhaps more over the top.
I think it's hard to compare. Obviously, there's a lot of restrictions with live action and stuff. I preferred Tiger Mask. I thought it was fantastic. I really want to see more of that, but I don't know if I'll be able to find this because it didn't get subbed properly or anything, but I think this is good. Only 26. Yeah. I would love to just get a group of people around interested in anime and just sit and watch this and just laugh and enjoy it because it's very enjoyable. And obviously I don't really want to watch it on my own because it's too scary. Satan, demon and bloody red hell. Oh, goodness. Oh.
Right, yeah. Well, that wraps it up. There's a few other shows we could have talked about, but there was Guy King, which his name was left off for a long time because he had problems with Toei. And then there's the later stuff he didn't do with Toei in the 70s, which was nowhere near as good, like Groyzer X.
Groyzer? Ugh.
Yes.
I don't like the title, let alone the sound of it all. Yeah, I think I'm more mecked out. That was my words to Brian when I messaged him. I'm all mecked out now. And this episode would have been done earlier, but the internet wouldn't allow it. And I'm so pleased it's over with. It was a learning curve for me, all this. And I did get some little gems with Aztec Kaiser and Cutie Honey. But it was a chore overall.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to watch more Cutie Honey, more Aztec Kaiser, and maybe some more Steel Jig as well.
And less Battle Hawk.
Less bad.
I did enjoy the whole experience of it all. I finally realised that female protagonists can be pretty good. So, what?
It's just...
What?
I forget you're watching some other things like Air Master as well then.
Oh, I've seen so AMVs of that. Enough AMVs.
Sexism.
I exaggerate this sexism. I really do. And I said I'd rather see two stubbly men chuking it out with tomahawks.
Fair enough. Anyway, we're back next week and we shall be talking One Piece.
Yay!
Amongst other things, as you finally dipped in. Back
finally,
again.
Finally.
500-odd episodes in.
517 episodes.
It's time to start watching One Piece.
Yeah. Got
anything
start,
you want to plug before we wrap up?
I've got a bad shoulder, I don't know how. So if somebody wants to come and give me a massage if they're trained, that would be nice. I'll plug that. No, Twitter, I am AntAskew. YouTube, I am Seng808, TSENG. There's something else, I'm sure of this. I think that's it.
So, still nowhere on your webcomic.
I'm writing some, well, it's getting there, but I'm writing something else at the moment. It's a caper, because I've been watching Lupin at the minute, so I'm inspired by capers and crimes and, you know, that kind of malark.
Good. Well, you can find me at awesome_engine on Twitter. You can find these episodes on awesome-engine.com, or you can look for Dynamite in the Brain on Facebook or iTunes, and we'll see you next week.
See you later.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.